3, 2, 1.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Tell the Damn Story. And look over there. It's Alex Simmons. Cute as a button. Look at him. Look at him over there.
Yeah, I'm feeling sharp today. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well.
Saturday.
Oh,
you don't know, it's Saturday.
We're recording here on Saturday. Gloria is with her sister. Shopping, they like to shop.
Oh.
But it's slow, patient shopping. Yeah, she wants to get my sister-in-law out walking. So they walk around the mall and they look at a couple of stores and discuss things that the younger sister likes. And then every fourth or fifth time, then they'll, having decided the purchase, then they'll make the purchase.
Gotcha.
So it's kind of hunting.
Stalking and hunting.
My wife is extraordinarily gifted at finding the double secret probation sales rack and stuff like that. And your godson is relaxing in the sun, but going to hop in his car and come back here to prep the house because he's having a party on Sunday.
Oh,
yeah, we're going to have to make ourselves scarce because my man is taking over the property.
I see. Is this a barbecue kind of thing?
Or? He decided he didn't want to be chained to the barbecue all day. So it's a catered affair.
Oh, excuse me. Pardonne-moi.
Pardonne-moi, indeed. Yeah.
Whoa. Okay.
Yes. Whoa.
Wow. He's come a long way, baby.
My other guy is working. He's assistant manager of a pool for the summer or something like that. Everybody's out. The dog is laying around sleeping. The cats are sleeping. So we can work, bro.
Yes. And let's do this.
And how are you?
In our last thrilling episode, we talked about the making of the rise of Soul Scream Anthologine, which is, which is your magnum opus project. How long was that actually in the works now?
I think the idea first came to me October of last year. Again, I had put together for the New York chapter of Horror Writers Association a Halloween-themed horror writers night of reading at this huge Barnes & Noble that has subsequently closed down and they're downsizing to another location. So this is one of the like great last hurrahs as far as events were there.
Yeah,
and I lined up 10 readers. And as they were going on,
it's writers, folks, who are going to do a reading. I don't want you to think he just had 10 people come in to sit and read.
No, 10 writers who read from their work. That was all horror writing. And the thing that impressed me was how many different subgenres were covered within that reading. Everybody had a slightly different definition of what horror was. And I also realized, with the experience that I had and the expertise I thought I had, that I could put together, using my skills back from the old editing days as a newspaper guy and all the stuff I did at school and all the stuff I've done with fiction and with you, I could put it all together. And wouldn't it be great to do kind of like a gateway drug for horror fans? Like a primer. That was my first thought. Get something that you could read as a horror fan and then give to your little brother or sister or the neighbor across the street or something like that.
Because there wouldn't be too much gratuitous violence or extreme
it's, or anything it's like almost that. In reaction to the rise and the hotness of splatterpunk and body trauma horror and all that extreme horror. That it's really not my cup of tea. So I went in a different direction. Then I started the old journalist in me. Wait, I'll do a profile for each author. So then, you go a little deeper into who that person is. I said, we have part anthology, that's part magazine. So that's where the idea anthologine, where that word was coined. And then once I got you and Teal to sit down with me and just go off on YouTube, both have a gift for remembering things from way back. So we talked about female heroes who used will, skill, or agency and who should be memorable. If they're not memorable enough, they should be remembered. And that became, in my eyes, when I was editing, I was like, wow, this reminds me of the panels at Cannes. And I realized I had all the elements to have a horror con in your hand. And that's where it all came from.
This is October, November, December, January, February, March, April, May, 8 months.
Yeah, or into June as well, but yeah.
Yeah.
And thought it was going to be a breeze. So I invited people that I knew because I'm not ready yet for the slush pile, the open call. That'll be down the line sometime. And that worked out. And then I separated them. I saw them present themes. I separated them into themes. And that worked out. And I put together the issue behind me.
200 and some odd pages?
202. Yep. I thought that was nice and slim and packed for that size. Yeah, there's just stuff everywhere in there. And so I was pretty excited by it and put it in order, gave it a final edit, gave it a final proofread, edited it again, final proofread. And then I've been working with Juan Cruz Prats down in Argentina and putting some art together. He did the cover and he did some interior stuff for me. So I put all that in. I asked them for two different skulls, one with smoke coming out of it. And I put that above the title of every, or next to the title of every fiction piece. Mm-hmm. And I got him to do a skull with glasses on, reading glasses, sitting atop a couple of books. And that was for the nonfiction. So I had a visual cue for everything. And I put it all together in a big Word file. So excited. And that's where we left off last week, because I went to first place it was going to be published was be Amazon. Right. And love them or hate them, they sell most books. So if you're going to start in one place, that makes sense. I didn't give it exclusivity, so I could go other places as well. But I went to lay out exactly what I had, and Amazon said, does not compute. And I tried everything I could, and I ran right up against the limits of my knowledge. And that was the cliff we left off on last week.
Yeah, yeah.
Me saying, oh, my God, I'm not going to be able to publish this.
Sitting there, and with all the people that had contributed or become involved in or were waiting for, you'd spoken to about all of that, and the material in your hand, you're sitting there with that thought in your head, dang it, how am I going to get through this wall?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and,
okay.
And I had paid people because that's how I wanted the business to run. So I had invested money that I had been putting aside for this dream for quite a while. There was no turning back.
Yep.
And I was dangling and didn't know if I'd be able to climb up on that cliff, no less get over that hump there. So to mix my metaphors.
So here we are. Here we are. You are facing this challenge. And what... I mean, first off, just briefly, what does it feel like when you hit that kind of a wall? Because, again, you'd put in 8 months of work and you'd gotten a lot of other people involved, and they were looking forward to or certainly expecting to experience the publishing of their work in your publication. And there you are standing there with this challenge in front of you. What did it feel like?
Okay, first, I'm going to adjust the timeline. I got the initial idea late in October. Let it fester, thought, ask through November. So I asked people in December, got the material by January. So December, January, by February, I had it all edited and ready to go. And then I hit the wall. So this was supposed to be out much sooner.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm like, what the hell? And the reason we're talking about this, of course, is because there are emerging writers and creatives who come to see us here, and they're going to have to go through the same learning curves. And I think that's the thing that saved me, is that with the publishing adventures I've been on with you and myself, I had learned that it is part of the learning curve and it's part of this whole big cycle. Mm. So I knew what I had to do, which is learn how to get past this wall of no. So my first response before I really even answer this is, everybody who's out there, you're going to hit that wall of no. It's just the next thing to figure out a way to yes. And most of the time, it's self-education. So the first thing I did was saw what money I had to spend, not much. But I said, let me go to a professional if this is something I really want to do. So I went to a printer that I know, and I explained what I wanted. And I had talked to him before the holidays. So she expected me like January 2nd. But this, by this time, was February. And I reminded her what I was asking for. And she said, yeah, I can do it. Now, we lost January and some of February. And now some of my business is picking up. So I will fit it in wherever I could. So two things happened. One, good news for her. She got inundated with work.
Okay.
Right. Hooray for our side for her, right?
Yep.
But also, she started seeing that to actually do it so that it would work, she was going to have to reprogram a bunch of stuff one by one, almost line by line or paragraph by paragraph, especially when it came with the illustrations. Time consuming, which was the one thing she didn't have. So mark it down is not the best communications, but a month to 6 weeks passed. Finally, I went into the printer and asked what happened. And she told me, and we agreed that I would pull the job. And she didn't charge me for anything that she had done. Recently bumped into her, and she asked how progress was going. And I was able to tell her what had transpired. But that's March. So March, April, into like half of May, I'm in the wilderness trying to figure out what to do. And if you go on social media and look for stuff, these days you get mostly commercials. You'll get ads for this product or that product. And it's much more difficult than it used to be to assess what's real and what's BS. And then I was looking for an education. And I think his name is Mark Lawson. There's 4,500 people who are willing to teach you how to do independent publishing.
Yeah.
And you and I have newsletters coming to us and emails coming to us for all these people.
And we're tagged on YouTube, so all their commercials pop up and all that.
And he was one of the bunch.
He's English, isn't he, if I remember correctly? Well,
yes, he's English.
Yes, he's English.
I was as cynical about him. Hi, I'm from the Bronx. How are you?
You're from England. What do I know? Right?
As anyone else that was I was following or looking at. Right. And I had started going walking, because in doing all this, I had started to become a large mammal. I had gained quite the pot belly, and I had to start walking it off, or it would become a health risk of some kind.
I wouldn't know nothing about that.
That mean, yeah, you are slim and trim and all of that. So I was looking for meaty podcast to listen to, and I had long since strayed away from all but one political podcast, because it's just yelling at whoever is on the opposite side of the fence, and it's all nonsense. But I was cycling through these writer podcasts. This Is Horror, fantastic interviews on people, a couple others that I had to stop listening to because I kept purchasing every book that the guest was going to go broke. Lawson's got one, self-publishing podcast. So I said, let me give him another listen. And it happened to be an episode where they were talking about yet another product. And it was their complete course on self-publishing, called Self-Publishing 101 or something like that. So I said, this is horseshit. Let's listen. And subtopic after subtopic. They were going through the different modules that they cover. What I kept discovering was like, oh, that module answered. That's, I need to answer a lot of questions on that topic. Oh, same thing with that module. Mm. Same thing with that module. And it seemed like it was aimed straight on at all the things that I knew at this point I didn't know. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, when you start to learn what you don't know, you're making progress. Right? Because if you, at the beginning, you think, I got everything. I know everything. And then if you're any good at all, you learn how little. So I took a chance on this course, and it has clearly and efficiently taught me step by step things I was making mistakes on, how I could do things better. And it comes with a Facebook group that if you buy into this course, that's how you get into the Facebook group. And it's a long way to say that wound up helping me stumble on the answer that solved the problem and got me off
reduction problem. Yeah.
So in going on to that Facebook page, I was just reading a bunch of things and commenting a little bit, but not that much. One, I was the new guy, and two, I definitely had more questions than answers. And when it came to production and when it came to layout, the one word kept popping up. It was two. One, I don't use my Apple computer anymore. So Venmo or Velma or whatever it was, that's for Apple, for Mac. I couldn't use it. But this word came up, Atticus.
Atticus, okay.
Atticus. And
I-C-U-S?
Yes. Uh-huh, okay. And it's a writing program for writers. But what all these comments were saying was, we really, what we use it for is the second part of the program, which is the layout program.
Oh.
And that layout program solves most, of, if not all, of your problems. And as you learn how to use it better, it gives you more flexibility in what you want to do. So I said, this ought to be $10,000. No, it wasn't.
How much?
If I remember correctly, it was $147.
Yeah, $147,000.
Yeah. I was used to the sarcasm. I'm sorry. It was $147. And for me, weighing the possibility of $147 solving all of my production problems, I could justify risking that amount. Mm. And for once, the risk paid off. Excellent. Atticus, I did have to go and sit and watch a couple of tutorials that they offer. And then I went on YouTube for 2 days and I'd watch. And then when I found one that really answered the things that I was having problems with, I put it on my...
Save it.
No, I actually put it on, because it's on YouTube. I know where it is. But I put it on my iPad. And I put my iPad next to where I'm talking now, which is my workstation. And I would do something until I got, I don't know how to do that. And I watched that episode until it told me how to do that. Click, do it, then go to the next thing. And that's how I got through basic layout. Then I went, I said, I want to put those skulls in. And I looked how to do that. And it was, once someone explained it to me, like I was a second grader, that's where my level was. I could... So I got each of those skills I needed. And the book you go through.
Book that I bought off of Amazon.
That was laid out through Atticus.
Wow.
And how long when did they that take? When I had it down.
Yes. Okay. Right?
When I had it down, when I was still doing the learning curve, but I knew where to get the answers.
Yeah.
A day and a half.
Beautiful.
And then I laid out Genius High using Atticus, one work day.
Wow. Wow. Yeah.
And I was adding in, you know how you've seen my table of contents and it's just chapters 1 through 50 or some nonsense? Mm-hmm. Genius High had some subtitles. So some of their chapters were named. So it started looking weird to me. So I decided to name all of them. So now Soul Scream has each chapter is either a short story or a profile or one of the features, because we have features and then we have that panel. So they had all titles, and now Genius High has all titles. So that may be how I go in the future, but it's like an extra, a bonus while I was doing this. You'll notice that there's a little flair to the fonts for the titles.
Oh, okay, yeah.
The copy is nice and clear. I was able to put in some illustrations.
I'm going to have to check the software out myself, actually.
Yeah, and Atticus, God bless you. You give me a bonus if you want. But
an affiliate.
I thought it was it answers a lot and solves a lot of problems for the independent publisher for a very fair price.
Is it Atticus.com or I.O. or?
I think it might be I.O. on the top of my head, but don't sue me if I'm wrong. We'll put
something in the.
You know how I found comments. It originally? I searched Atticus for Writers, and the options came in, and then, oh, there it is. Boom. And then once I had it, there you go.
So you were able, I'm sorry, didn't mean to cut you off. It's just exciting. So you found this software that made the post-production on putting the book together, the physical features together, made that possible. And then what? Did you go back to Amazon to upload?
Well, one of the great things about Atticus, and it sounds like an Atticus commercial, but we aren't getting paid.
That's right. Not yet, anyway.
They have an export feature.
Ah.
And they export, off the top of my head, I think it's PDF for print and EPUB for the ebook, which are exactly what Amazon and other Kobo and I'm sorry, I should have had all four. There's four different ones, but these will suffice for what those requirements are. And so when I did that, it worked. And I actually, the only thing I had to adjust after that was the actual decimal point using the fraction sizing of the cover had to be adjusted.
Okay.
Because we thought it was 6 by 9, but it's really 5.78 or whatever. And once that came up, I just took a picture of that and sent it to Juan. And Juan says, fine, here you go. And Trueborn Designs that did the cover for Genius High, she made the adjustment for me as well. She does fine work too. So
Trueborn,
Trueborn Designs out of Northwest United States. Yeah, give her a try. You can find her on social media. Probably look up Trueborn Designs is the best way to find her. But
and we probably
also
will put a
Northwest
link.
NW Reader.
We will probably put a link in the comment section for that. So yeah. There you had the proper format for dropping it into the hands, the digital technological Amazon, KDP. And boom, off you went.
Again, we had to adjust the covers. And if we're going to mention Trueborn Design, let's mention that Juan Cruz Prats can be found on Fiverr. That's where he works out of. So we got all that done. But I want to stress for a moment that I had spent weeks editing and laying out. I had gotten blurbs earlier, and then all that was laid on the back. Mm-hmm. So this was purely layout and production. Mm-hmm. With Atticus, each of them only took me a few days, mm-hmm. and were accepted without problem. And I was shocked and delighted. And then give you a review and you look and yeah, things worked out. And then you hit publish, man. That's a scary moment.
Just quickly, and I don't want this to be too detailed. I think people can do some homework on their own. But when you upload your manuscript to Amazon, you said something about some in other conversations, you've said things about keywords and things like that. So just
right.
When someone is going to upload their...
There are several pages to lay out.
Right. What are they? Without, again, too much detail.
Well, there's they want to know who's publishing it.
Right.
They want to know the date. They want to know if it's a series or not. What size the book is going to be. Mm-hmm. What kind of the cover. For example, I always use the matte style. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to shine when people take a picture of it or it's on, I want people to be attracted to the artwork on it.
Yeah. Genre, do you have to indicate genre?
Not yet. You have to go to color of page. I always use cream rather than white. White feels less professional to me.
So he's talking about the interior pages. You right. have white pages, or you can have cream color pages right. that your print, your copy is actually printed on. And what's the advantage of white or cream?
In my opinion, and it's going as far as that, I've done white and I've done cream. Cream looks more professional. I want my books to look exactly like other books you pull off the shelf. At 6.9, at 6 times 9, 6 inches by 9 inches, they're a little bigger than some other paperbacks, but more and more paperbacks are getting around that size. So
right.
I want it to be, yeah, that's what it is. There you go.
It was that thing. Was there anything else that you had to, any other information that you
yeah,
had?
Yeah, there's a ton of other stuff. You have to have the ISBN number, right. and they will offer to supply one for you. And you have to make a decision about that, because mm-hmm. that comes with some strings attached. Okay. They also want you to be Kindle exclusive or Amazon exclusive, mm-hmm. where you get a bigger cut of KDP, but you cannot go anywhere else. As a matter of fact, if you accept an ISBN, which is the barcode that from Amazon, then other places won't even consider publishing it. So that's a lesson I learned. You learn the hard way. But
so you have to buy your own ISBN number.
Yes, and there's places to do it. You can buy 10 at a time or whatever. You can buy them one by one, but 10 at a time seems to work. I bought 10 a long time ago. I haven't used all 10. Some people say, I better get 50. Good luck. You're going to be busy.
Yeah.
And if you look up purchase ISBN, there'll be a bunch of places. Just do your homework as yep. to which okay. ones, because some are
now,
just
the thing reversed. That I find most independent books a weakness, or maybe they don't approach it with a marketing mindset, but it's the back cover copy.
Yeah.
You know, how did you approach coming up with a synopsis, if you yeah. will, of your book? Was there an attitude, a tone?
Definitely. There definitely is. And my years in local journalism helped with that, because I'd have to have some input on ads and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So I had to come up with a couple of phrases. The death of marketing is a long sentence or a long phrase. Mm-hmm. Don't, the Huracan you can hold in your hands
rolls trippingly off the top.
Boom, right? Or gateway drug for horror fans is subversive enough without being too dark to attract mm-hmm. some people. So those kind of things. And then in the paragraph, you want to lead with one of those catchy phrases and like end with one of those catchy yeah. phrases, right? It's Keith Moon was fretting to Ringo Starr one time, or vice versa. It might have been Keith advising Ringo about, I need to do a great drum solo. He says, don't worry about the middle. Just have a really catchy beginning and a really catchy end. And it's... and that's what you want there. So I started with a hook, and then I went as briefly as possible. And this is where embrace rewriting as your friend. You will rewrite back cover copy or the book description copy for Amazon or Kobo mm-hmm. or any of those probably more than you do your actual novel. Because you're writing it over and over again. How can I get it, say it better? How can I be entertaining and quick and still deliver? Short, punchy sentences, I think, work. So what I did was get maybe the top third, a headline and a paragraph covering in the top third. And then mm-hmm. the rest of the next third or the next 40 or 50% were blurbs. And you gotta be careful. Don't ask for blurbs for the people that are actually in your book. So I spread it around, because that will give it more legitimacy. So I had a Stoker winner, a Stoker finalist.
Stoker being an award within the horror.
It's the horror Oscars.
Right, there you go. Right. Okay.
And then a third person who won several awards and was funny. He, I think he's an African-American award-winning horror author and tequila enthusiast, which I thought was pretty funny.
There's a hook line if ever.
There's a hook, right?
Yeah.
So then the bottom was the Seamus and Nunzio logo and the barcode. And right. There's your cover.
Okay. Back cover in particular. Yeah.
But you have to form and function. Form and function. You want it light and airy to read through, punchy words, dynamic verbs, and in and out. Boom, boom. And there you go.
I'm sorry. I want to leave room here or actually steer towards now. Something that was very important that came up when we were talking pre-recording. Mm-hmm. The book comes out.
Yes.
You get the book out.
You've climbed that mountain.
You got it out. It is out into the world on Amazon, by the way. Yes, you can go find it. Yes, there'll be a link in the comments. But the book was out. All of this time, all of these efforts, all of these challenges overcome, and boom, there it's off and running at 202 pages. How'd you feel?
I felt elated and excited. And very quickly after that, I realized that while I had scaled this mountain, I was at the foot of a much larger mountain. And that's when the imposter syndrome attacked once again. Imposter syndrome is something we all get. And it basically says, you suck. Why are you even doing this? Nobody likes you. You suck. You can't do this.
You don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you're talking about. Yeah.
And having gone through it somewhere between 20 and 100 times, you start and listening to other people in creative professions, you start realizing it's part of the cycle, creative cycle. It was making a point, which sucks because sometimes it's just babbling nonsense, but it was saying, how are you going to market this? You have to get people to see this. And that's another set of skills that you need to learn as an independent publisher. And yes, I should have been doing this 6 months ago, should have been promoting it 6 months ago. And my justification is that I didn't know if I could get it to come out. But now that it's out, okay, I've got to catch up and got to start marketing for the next batch and all that sort of stuff and have no time for imposter syndrome. And that's when it sees that clear opening and it gets you right in the solar plexus of your ego and really knock you for a loop. It's been a bit of a roller coaster ride being elated and then saying, oh my God. No, nobody cares. Nobody. And then someone will, I send contributor copies out, and someone will send a picture with them with the book, or they'll send a nice letter saying, my God, it looks really great. I'm excited. Thank you. And that happened once. One of the things I try to do is consume fuel, right? I put creative things into my system to help feed the output. Glorious and I, on Thursday, went on a date, an afternoon date, as only geezers can go, because other people are working. We went to see Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, and we went to lunch, watch out, and then went to the film. And the film was big fun. And I don't think Indiana Jones should ever be anything more than big fun. And it was exactly that, and we're having a great time, and there's moments for the feels and serendipity that one of the people who are in Soul Scream Anthologine actually did an essay on the pleasures of audio horror. She wrote a really touching email to me that happened to show up on my Apple Watch. Not to be like, hey, I have an Apple Watch, but the kids spoiled me one time. And you see the light. What's the matter? Who's dead? Because you grew up in the Bronx. Who's dead? And I looked and I just saw just enough of it. It hit me in the feels and I started tearing up. And Glorious looked over at me. She's like, I know this is such a great part. And I showed her the email. It's like, Indy is, God bless him. I'm feeling for Indy, but this is what I'm crying.
Yep. Yeah.
So you have to take those wins. You have to navigate the imposter syndrome, the little editor on your shoulder, because they will kick your ass and drag you down. Find out what works. For some people, it's working out in the gym or a quick nap or a long
doing
walk,
something with the family or friends.
Yeah,
or,
when all of that fails, I'm going to the gym, but maybe a long walk or whatever, or playing with the dog. What I find is a sure thing for me is to put on some music.
Particular? And
I started with what's becoming the album of the summer for me. Sean and Tyler, my sons, have been recommending stuff to me over the years. And now they're recommending the latest album from a guy named Jelly Roll.
Oh,
Jelly Roll. Now, Jelly Roll is a Southern country rocker rapper.
With Mondo tattoos and so
forth. Yeah, he's got a frost
I've seen
on his
him.
Face
yeah.
and all that. So they play it on their speakers when they're up in their apartments. I like to call them, since they're older, they're up in their studio apartments. So I heard bits and pieces and I tried it, and it's becoming the album of the summer for me. If that doesn't work, I have a couple of playlists. If that doesn't work, essential songs of the 70s. Sometimes I have to go to a particular year. And sometimes when all else fails, then you have to go 70s soul. That will usually get you moving and grooving.
By the way, I got to do this because you're always kidding me about my time machine. But you just mentioned Jelly Roll, and I just feel obligated to mention that there was another Jelly Roll.
He was a earlier. Morton.
Jelly Roll Morton, that's it, right? He was born in 1890.
So you went to third grade with him.
Right. Yeah, I'm going to get you later. But he's a jazz musician. His brother is a jazz musician.
I learned about Jelly Roll in college.
And I'm just curious if this Jelly Roll...
I don't know if he even knows about Jelly Roll.
About the other Jelly Roll?
One thing is that Jelly Roll Morton, to the best of my memory, I've been out of college quite a while, but I think Jelly Roll was spelled as one word. This guy spells Jelly and Roll as two words, like a first name. Like the New York Times would probably refer to him as Mr. Roll. So I wonder, but his music has definite country roots, definite rock roots, definite rap roots in there. And his lyrics are like gutter spirituality or gutter Christianity. He's talking about the bar and the cross and Jesus saving him while he's in the gutter and that kind of thing, which these were blues staples. So either he knowingly is borrowing most white people, or he is going to come into a realization that, wow, I'm really treading the same crossroads, etc., as the classic
the other one,
Mississippi blues men, and maybe I should. So I don't know. I don't know enough whether he has educated in the roots. I would imagine any musician would be, but all I know is
time will tell. Yeah,
music saves.
This music helped pull you.
Music saves, bro.
Saves you, right? Pulls you out of it. Yeah,
and usually I do music and I clean the house, which is something that
on Fridays.
I do, yeah, because a lot of stuff will build up and then I'll work out the problems on Friday and that kind of stuff. This last wave knocked me right out of cleaning as well. You have to, if you're not paying attention to it. And I was supposed to go to a reading Friday night and I hadn't recovered enough. Yeah.
Okay.
You got to take care of the self-care, because part of the roller coaster, part of the cycle is that in dealing with imposter syndrome or dealing with the frustration of whatever wall you hit, you got to stop, get whatever's going to give you the energy. Mm-hmm. Okay, how do I creatively go over that? I'm telling you, you can learn anything. And most of the time, you can find at least a foothold research on YouTube or whatever, because there's a billion tutorials out there.
Let me also embrace our time on the planet. If Chris and I are sitting here, both disciples of learn it in order to do it at our particular time in life, then anybody younger than us has no excuse.
That's right.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, if geezers can do it, you utes can do it.
The two utes. Yeah. All right. So we're going to bring this to a close. This has been a great episode. I got to mention two things. One, Chris, thank you so much for going full out in terms of sharing the experience, the full ride with us. I know that there's hours more that you could talk about, and certainly would, given the opportunity. But the fact that you were being very clear, transparent about the pros and cons of this experience, what you didn't know, what you had to learn, what didn't work. And in order to move forward again, you had to rethink this or dialogue with that. The big question here that I have, and it's not something you can answer in one sentence, but I'm going to ask you to try anyway. What you did with Soul Scream was something that you really wanted to do, something that was an idea that was born in you, was inspired by some things you'd seen. Right. You brought in writers. You didn't make it just about your work. You brought in other writers. There's a lot of work that you did to make it happen.
Yeah.
And you met some challenges on it. What would you say to anybody who is attempting to do something that's going to be tough for them, or it's going to require a kind of work and all that, and that is going to put them in the spotlight?
Okay.
Not necessarily make them famous or anything like that, but in other words, people's opinions are now going to be at some point laid upon them. What would you say to people who are facing that particular moment?
First thing I would say, I'm going to try it looking right at you, is I'm going to quote someone who said the same thing to me. Says, if you can avoid doing it at all, then do that. Avoid doing it. Don't do it. Because if you can take it or leave it, but if you can't, if it's burning in you, then you'll stay around. For all the steps it takes, will it into existence, but then you have to keep working at it to make it as good as it can get. For the second issue, I'm rereading the stuff now, and I realize this one story I want to include, but it's 33 pages. So I'm going to have to cut a third of it out. That's going to fall on you as an editor, and you have to be empathetic and supportive and cognizant that someone else wrote this. You can't be a butcher about it. But at the same time, you have to know, are people going to read this for 30 pages and make those choices? And then you're going to have to learn. You might look at this book and say, you didn't do this or that thing. I welcome your letters and emails.
Yeah.
But you have to put it in the best order so there's some kind of flow. And then every aspect of it is a judgment, and then judgments upon judgments within yourself. Is it the best? Can I move it this way? When you're doing the layout, I kept running into things that I didn't know how to do. You have to find answers for that.
So,
or else
and
it never works.
People's opinions,
it is the gateway for the imposter syndrome to come running back in. If people find fault, you can be like, oh, I knew it sucked. Like it's good to know that the New York Times, as venerable as it is, will have a typo 3 times a week on the front page. So you need perspective. You want to hear about typos because you want to see if you can fix them and then get as perfect as possible. What also can hit is if there's silence. I was lucky enough to get a trickle of responses especially from the people in there. And those keep me going. Wow, this person loves that he was in there or that she was in there. They're excited or they're posted something. Did one of my sons, Sean, taught me about Canva, this ad. And I thought it was really cool because you start at the top left and there's arrows that take you in a circle.
Yeah.
And the first part of the sentence is in the top right. So there's the cover, little part of the sentence, a picture of the author, and then the rest of the sentence. But if your eye travels left, up, and down, then it at first doesn't make any sense. I learned that. And I had to keep, there's 2 or 3 people who mentioned that second part, that's the bottom left. It's not really a sentence. And I had to take them through, follow the arrows. And then they saw what we were trying to do. But again, you have to be open. A couple of people mentioned it. So does that little ad work? And then I did one individually for each person and sent them to those people. And two people posted it. But then there's surprises where someone got a sci-fi magazine to do an ad in their online entity, whatever their online entity is. But that was unexpected.
So you just do what you do.
You do what you do and do what's true to you. I wrote a Substack thanking Cynthia Paleo and Todd Heisman for this StokerCon 2022, because one, it saved my existence when I couldn't breathe in Denver, but also it stayed with me so much that Soul Scream is modeled on it. As a matter of fact, when I did the Substack, I did a picture of the two covers next to each other.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that.
Tonally, they are similar.
Yeah.
That's part of my bow to them. So be grateful, be thankful, be mindful that people are helping you along the way and try to remember every single person. It's one of the reasons I used to do 33 or 57 adjectives to describe Alex Simmons at the beginning of each episode. But he got a laser sword from Star Wars and he was attacking me back with it. So we have to calm down a little bit, but that's all of it. And then it's like, now I'm trying to put out new publicity. Got to be careful. You can't over saturate people, because that's as bad or worse, but you're responsible for putting it out in different places. So, you know, there's a thing, BookBub, I'm going to look at an ad for there. So it's always trying new things. Where else can I put it?
And see where it goes.
And at the same time, I'm preparing volume two.
So that's a good way to know. In that note is, A, you're promoting volume one, and you're already working on assembling volume two. And
volume two is assembled. Volume three and four are being assembled. Some decisions are being made about them. This is an evolving project. The Christmas teaser looks a little different than volume one. Volume two will look a little different than volume one. And then hopefully it always improves. We'll see.
We're gonna stay on top of this. We'll be talking about this periodically as the months roll on. So again, I want to say thanks, Chris, for being so transparent and clear about this.
I hope it was helpful.
In revealing all of this about that, I also noticed, for those of you who are watching the video, that I've learned something else about Chris that I hadn't known for years. I'd always wondered what was Superman's real identity. And I see now the cape hanging in the background there. So, I mean, you Chris, why didn't you tell me?
You want the story behind that cape?
Maybe save that for the next time. We'll save that.
Anytime you want, I will tell you that story.
Okay, we'll definitely. The secret of Superman's cape is going to be our next story. Ooh, what is this?
This is a little sneak peek reveal. This is the roof.
That
Juan did for us.
Yep.
There you go. That's my character McTavish. And we're going to see him on the cover of volume two.
That's very nice. Very nice indeed. Okay. Again, thanks very much for everything, Chris. Everybody, thank you for listening and watching and whatever else you're doing.
Yeah.
If you have any questions, concerns, suggestions, please leave them in the comment section and we will respond. But I also want to thank, I don't have his name in front of me, but I want to thank the person who left a comment on YouTube the last time. We really appreciate that.
About this Spider-Man episode we did.
That was regarding episode 264, as a matter of fact.
Yes, and I did respond to him.
Yes, you did.
Hopefully I was correct. And just, it was very exciting to see that. And we encourage you all to let us know stuff.
Yeah, please.
Give us your comment. Share your enthusiasm. We're in this together.
Yep. Okay, everybody. Oh, and by the way, there'll be a link to Amazon for Soul Scream in the comment section. So see you folks next time. Yeah. At least one of us will. Yes. Yeah, see you folks next time. Chris, take care, man.
Peace. And thank you very much, Alex. All right, everybody.